She turned to regard the three witnesses, to find them all grinning and Kipper nodding. "And look at her arm," Penelope said, noting the blue mist gathered around Catti Bree's left forearm. She rushed over and tugged Catti Bree back to the others, pulling back the sleeve to show the seven-starred marking.
"What?" Catti Bree asked.
"Mistra," Kipper said reverently and bowed his head.
"It is true, then," Dowell added, grinning widely.
"What?"
Catti Bree asked again.
"Your spellcasting,"
Penelope started to explain, but Kipper cut her short.
"You drew your power from the old ways," he said. "Is this how you were trained?"
Catti Bree didn't know how to respond. It was how she had been trained, but in another life. In this one, not so.
"What does it mean?" she asked, deflecting the other's question.
"The weave girl," Kipper asked. "Do you feel it?"
Catti Bree thought back to the moment when her spell-scar magic had failed, that flash in the sky, like an eclipse, like a web, like the weave of magic. She looked at Penelope, her expression quite dumbfounded.
"Your celebration,"
she managed to whisper, and she put it all together.
"Has the effect of the spell plague ended?"
Penelope hugged her suddenly and unexpectedly.
"So we pray,"
she whispered.
"So we pray."
Catti Bree glanced out the window of her room at the Ivy Mansion months later, looking back to the east toward Netherill. Her spell-scar powers, the shape-shifting and storm-calling, like those of the other marked wizards at the Ivy Mansion, had not returned, and by all indications, the spell plague was indeed no more. At long last. But what did that mean for Niraj and Kavita, or, Catti Bree wondered, for Avalyir and the Coven? The Harples seemed quite overjoyed by the news, even though they had all begun retraining. The library of the Ivy Mansion dated far back before the spell plague, of course, and so they were well equipped for this strange shift of magic. And when she thought about it, Catti Bree realized that she was better equipped than almost any, for she had been trained in the old ways initially, after all, and could any other mages in the realms other than elves and drow say the same? A few, she realized, for the Harples had not fully abandoned their previous ways. There were other differences of note between herself and the other wizards around her, and Catti Bree could only attribute it to the special days she had spent in Eruladun. When she called upon her magic, her spell scars reacted, but that was not true for Penelope or the few others similarly scarred. Even for Catti Bree, the reaction seemed a cosmetic thing only, for her magic was not exceptionally potent. Indeed, were she to engage in a spell battle against Penelope, Catti Bree was certain that she would be obliterated in short order. Still, Catti Bree had a lot to teach the Harples, even as they invited her to stay on and train under their masters. She was more adept at converting the spells back to the old ways than any, and Kipper and the others truly appreciated her efforts in that regard, and shared some of their best dwyamers with her in return. So, for the fourth time since Catti Bree had moved from her warrior ways to that of a wizard, she had found a new school. First she had trained with a great Lady Illustrial of Silvery Moon, then with Niraj and Kavita, then at the Coven, and now here at the Ivy Mansion. What student of the arcane arts could ever ask for more? She had been fortunate indeed. "No, the fifth time," she said aloud, correcting the thought as she recalled her greatest instructor, the one from whom she received her divine abilities. She looked down at her right forearm, at the unicorn head, and heard again the magical song of Mialiki. The young woman nodded determinedly, thinking of her coming reunion with her beloved Drizzt, and thinking, too, of the purpose of her return. What might be in store for her, she wondered. Might the Demon Queen actually come hunting for Drizzt, and there to battle the avatar of Mialiki? What might she do in the face of such bared power? Would it be a proxy fight, perhaps, minions against minions? Aye, but in any such battle, Catti Bree surely liked the odds for the companions of the hall. Catti Bree realized that she was smiling widely. Indeed, she felt as if her grin would take in her ears.
to be on the road again with Drizzt, with Brunner and Regis, and oh, how she hoped they would find their way to Kelvin's Cairn on the spring equinox of 1484. In that moment, she was certain that she would find Drizzt. In that exhilarating moment, Catti Bree found courage and heart, and indeed her own heart pounded in her chest. She knew that Drizzt could be long dead, of course, or either Brunner or Regis might have fallen along their journey. She knew her own path was far from secured, with many dangerous miles to go and her powers reduced, and perhaps with a dangerous sorceress and her many minions close on her trail. But in that moment, Catti Bree knew that she would find her love, and she would stand beside him prepared to do battle. Her expression shifting from joy to a look of grim resolve, the young woman dived back to her studies. Summer turned to autumn, and autumn to winter, and the year of the Ageless One became the year of deep water drifting. Brunner rode a caravan out of Mithril Hall, bound for Mirabar, and Regis crossed the Sea of Fallen Stars. But Catti Bree couldn't know any of that. The year turned again, to the year of the Grinning Halfling, and the seasons turned once more, with Brunner crossing through Mirabar and bound for Baldur's Gate, while Regis rode with the Grinning Ponies along the Tradeway, neither of them so far from Longsaddle. But Catti Bree's eyes remained in her books. Furthering her power served her goddess's wishes, and would serve her and Drizzt well. She would stay in Longsaddle another year or two, she hoped, and perhaps even a bit longer. If she could approach the level of proficiency needed to master a teleportation spell that could set her immediately into Icewind Dale. That was her plan, at least. But one gray morning before the turn of 1483, Penelope called her to her chambers, where Catti Bree found Penelope's husband and old Kipper already seated around the sorceress's desk. "We have come to think of you as a friend, even family," Penelope told her, as soon as she had taken the indicated seat. "Many have whispered that you should be formally ordained as a Harple." Catti Bree thought to ask if that meant she would have to turn herself into a statue, or a werewolf, or burn herself with an errant fireball, or some other such catastrophe, but, gauging the somber atmosphere around her, she wisely kept her jokes private. "We have opened our home and books to you," Kipper added.
"You have been most generous, all of you," Catti Bree agreed.
"Do you think it is time to tell us the truth of Delhi Curti?"
Penelope asked bluntly. Catti Bree stood and stared at Penelope. Her friend and mentor, unsure,